What's up, this your boy Lil Duval, and check out my podcast, Conversations with Unc, on the Black Effect Podcast Network. Each and every Tuesday, Conversations with Unc podcast feature casuals and in-depth talk about ebbs and flows of life and the pursuit of happiness. Unlike my work on stage, I tap into a more serious and sensitive side to give life advice and simply offer words of encouragement, yet remind folks to never forget to laugh. Every Tuesday, listen to Conversations with Unc, hosted by Lil Duval on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Presented by AT&T. Connecting changes everything.
Hey everyone, this is Jody Sweetin from the podcast How Rude, Tanneritos. I've been needing a quick getaway with my family, and the 2024 Hyundai Santa Fe is the perfect vehicle to take us there. It has standard third row seating, so I'm able to pack my entire family, plus pets in the car, while also having enough room for our camping essentials. Available H-Track all-wheel drive will get us through any dirt trails, and available dual wireless charging pads will ensure we never have to worry about getting stuck with a dead phone in the middle of nowhere. Visit HyundaiUSA.com. or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Hi, I'm Giancarlo Esposito, and I'm here to introduce you to my new series, Parrish. My character, Gray Parrish, was a getaway driver.
I'm retired from a life, you know that.
He's in a world over his head.
Tell me about this driver job.
And he's asked to start to figure things out.
I did what you told me to.
He will try to do what's right and seek justice.
Parrish, all new Sundays at 9 on AMC and stream on AMC Plus.
Hi, you guys. It's me, Arden. I hope you little bunnies are doing okay out there. I know it was another week with no main episode. Thankfully, we have got you covered. And if you guys are really jonesing, HBO Max right now is airing Bachelor in Paradise Australia season one, which in my opinion is the greatest season of The Bachelor I have ever watched. And we did it on Patreon with Brian Sofie. If you go on our Patreon page, it's down at the – it was like one of the very first episodes we ever recorded. It's the very first episode with it is called Riding the Bipolar High with Brian Sofie in 2017. So – just go if you're interested and you're like, Arden, I need to be watching a narrative because Bachelorette is now not coming out till mid-October. And if you're jonesing, you can join our Patreon. You can go on Bachelor in Paradise Australia season one. You can listen along. And plus, we're still doing new things. We're still doing Bachelor in Paradise, Bachelorette New Zealand. We're doing Real Housewives of New York. So we're doing 6 episodes a month of new content. And then there's all the old archives. And I got to tell you, the Bachelor in Paradise Australia one is fantastic. We have another episode of Feelin' Thorny, and I really appreciate everything that you guys have been reaching out with. And I just wanted to say we're going to be back next week with a new episode. We're going to be breaking down the Nick Viall Bachelor Best of Season with your boy, Jerry Traynor, and your new fave, Miles Gray. And we have Allison Rosen joining us, so that'll be really fun. And in the meantime, I'm going to read 2 emails and some of the reviews. If you want to, and you guys, thank you so much, everybody who's been ordering the book. It comes out, it'll be almost a month from today. It comes out September 29th. And my goal is if I get on the New York Times bestseller list, I'm going to throw a show in my mom's yard in Rhode Island. I'm going to make my brother let me do it. And I still have that offer that I paired up with Premier Collectibles, where you can get the hardcover book and you can get a signed book plate and you can get a Little Miss Compton canvas tote, all for the price of just the book. It's the first 250 people who order get that, and then the second 250 just get the signed book plate. And then I have another special exciting thing I'm going to tell you at the end of this. So here's some fun emails we got. This is from Nicole Riche, and it's Houston's and a long-lost hello. Dear Arden, Hi, I've been meaning to write you an email forever, like over a year, but what prompted me to finally do it is because I have a mutual shared love for Houston's. I used to live in Boston. I went to the Houston's in Faneuil Hall all the time. They've since closed it, which is heartbreaking, but man, it was a good time. I'm not sure you remember me, but we've actually met a few times before. Back in the 1999-2000, I was a casting assistant in LA, and I worked for Mally Finn. Mally adored you, and you were always on her list. Yeah, Mally Finn. Yes, Mally Finn. You came into the office several times for auditions. I mentioned you to a friend of mine, Andrew Mudge, and you were always so nice, and I followed your career and, of course, Insatiable. I absolutely love your podcast. I've been listening to it for a few years. It brings me a lot of joy. It makes me laugh so much. Whether you're talking about the Bachelor franchise or life in general, it is fantastic. Thank you for being so open about your life. And it's a blast to hear someone I kind of know. I know quarantine has been rough for everyone, but you've been really a bright spot for me. Thank you for your honesty and humor. I just wanted to say you're doing a great job and I'm always rooting for you. I follow you on Instagram. I love your posts, especially dancing in the kitchen after getting highlights. Can't wait to keep listening. I'm halfway through the episode with Wells and it's a lot of fun. I hope you're well. Have a nice night and thank you for being so fabulous. Sincerely, Nicole Richie. Nicole, I just wanted to say, and to all of our fans that email in, truly, it means so much to me. It's so, like, I love this. I loved Mally Finn. I love, like, I feel like we're all in this together. I mean, look, as you know from listening to me, this is a freaking journey and it takes a village. And even if it's like an audio virtual village, you guys are the sweetest, sweetest group of people around. And I have felt all of your support personally over the last few years. And I hope you feel my support now because I've made it through some crazy ass things. And I'm just telling you this at some point in time, we will get through this. This too shall pass. This too shall pass, and it may not be your best year ever, but you don't need to make it your worst. It's okay. You can still have a little bright spot. Here's one more email that made me laugh so hard. This is called, the subject is Mesnick and the Passion Bucket. Rebecca Germano emailed us, and she says, Hi, Arden, Katie, Tana, and the rest of the Really Accept This Rose crew. I recently listened to your fabulous rookie tribute episode recapping the Jason Mesnick GOAT 3-hour slog. No shit. These are long, man. The new rookie crew was on fire, but the discussion as to whether or not Jason Mesnick was attractive reminded me of a time in 2010 when I was suffering through working at The Gap. Let's not get into that. In a Seattle suburb. My coworker started freaking out because The Bachelor was in the store. Not having watched the show at the time, I was shocked when I saw him. As you discussed, he was one, short, but two, he seemed to be exuding no sexual energy, so I was really confused as to why my female coworkers were all a Twitter. Given that Arden once proclaimed herself the chief eunuch inspector, which I don't remember but is incredible, she probably would have a better read on the situation, but I thought I would share those first impressions. During the episode, I kept waiting for Arden to bring up one of the best tweet of the weeks ever, which happened on the Ari finale episode. After Chris Harrison said it looked like Jason's passion bucket is full, the hero listener tweeted, "Passion bucket is what Jason calls his wife's asshole." Ah, so good. I re-listened to that episode of your podcast to confirm I was remembering correctly, and I ended up bursting out laughing again numerous times. It's so, so freaking funny. And if my voice wasn't burned out from doing 88 podcasts today, it would sound like a heartier laugh. It's so funny to me. Padgett and Aaron are amazing, as well as Arden, Katie, and Tana. And the last thing Aaron said on the podcast was, "You know I like a good low-hanging ball on my clavicle." Now, whenever Jason is brought up on your show or your podcast, I immediately think of Passion Bucket and The Gap. You and your friends and the Really Accept This Rose crew are truly a goddamn delight, and the merry shit show you put out is a joy. The humor in it, in the words of the new rookie trio, makes me feel seen and heard and representation matters. I cannot wait to receive my copy of Little Miss Little Compton, and please keep up the Lord's work. This world of ding-dongs needs it, Rebecca. Also, I would once again like to shamelessly nominate myself for the listener episode that you have been teasing. Okay, you guys, it is next week. This is it. You guys officially have 2 days to email us, okay? So this is coming out on Friday. We're going to decide on Sunday. Whatever the next rookie episode is, we're going to have three guest fan co-hosts that are going to Zoom in and do the podcast with us. So if you want to nominate yourself for a friend, because people have been doing it, you've got 2 more days to do it, okay? Also, I got to tell you, I asked you shamelessly, we're trying to get over 1,000 likes on iTunes. I know it's dumb. It shouldn't matter. I agree with you. Sadly, people seem to care about it. So here's the deal. You have been doing it, and we appreciate it. And all of the like numbers are going up. All the review numbers are going up. So that is awesome. And so if you have it in you, just go click, preferably a 5-star review. That's awesome. Go click the review thing. And if you want to leave an actual review, mwah, chef's kiss. They're so good. Here we go. So here's a review. We only got 1 actual review. So if you want to be read, it's a pretty guaranteed thing that you're going to be read if you leave us an actual review this week. 5 stars. Lori is my queen by Stay-at-Home Dog Mom 2020. This podcast is single-handedly getting me through the pandemic. Arden and her takes on the Bachelor franchise are the laughs that keep me from crying during this roller coaster of a year. Yes, honey. That's what we're here for. Although we have come to realize that we have little control over anything during this dumpster fire every year, this podcast is one of the few things that bring a small amount of consistency and routine to my week. I find myself laughing out loud to her and her co-host's response, and I'm always in awe of Lori's supreme historical knowledge of Bachelor Nation. This podcast is a gem of a show, has protected my heart during troubled times, and will always have my rose. Stay-at-Home Dog Mom 2020. That is a beautiful podcast review. Thank you so much. So here we are. Here we are. I'm going to give you an intro, and I'm going to leave you with 1 final exciting thing that's coming up. We've been doing the in-depth, intimate Feeling Thornies where we get to know people. And this was inspired by me writing my book, Little Miss Little Compton, which comes out in a month. So we've done one with Rob Benedict. We did one with the star of The Wrong Missy and Orange is the New Black, Lauren Lapkus. We did one with Wells Adams from the Bachelor franchise. And I'm really excited. This one was I was so excited to sit down with this person. I was on this show on Netflix called Insatiable for the last 2 seasons, and it was the first time that I had a female showrunner. It was created by a woman. Most of the directors were either women or gay men. We had mostly female producers, and it was such a pleasure. It was so inspiring. I loved this woman so much. I talked to today our creator and our showrunner and the brilliant writer, Lauren Gussis, and she wrote on Dexter, I think for the entire run that it was on, for 5, 6, 7 years. I mean, she's a terrific writer, and she's brave, and she's fearless, and she was a fun boss, and she unapologetically was a woman in charge in a way that was like a joy to witness and fun to work for. I always wanted to do a good job for her, and I always felt free and accepted enough to take chances and take risks. And I felt like if she picked you, she thought you were talented and she let you do your thing. And so, you know, as a writer myself, it was really fun for me to sit down and pick the brain of somebody that, you know, I get nervous when I pitch things. I can tend to doubt myself. I get my little weirdo social anxiety. And to talk to somebody that seemingly so effortlessly has just shown up for herself. And so I'm so excited for you guys to hear this. And so much of me talking, but here's the final thing. I'm really excited about this, but we're doing kind of like a virtual book party, like a book release party, like a show. And it's the same place that we did the live draft picks, the Dynasty Typewriter, which is such a cool theater. And they're doing all these virtual shows. And so that means you can, from any time zone, you can come to the show. And what's cool about it is it's $5. So, you know, you don't have to fly in. You don't have to get a hotel. And even if it wasn't like COVID times, you know, this is a $5 commitment. And even if you're not available, the link is good for a full week afterwards. You can watch it. So we're doing our show. It's going to be me and Lauren Lapkus. It's a book party. I'm going to do, and it's before the book comes out, like the weekend before. It's Saturday, September 26th at 5 p.m. Pacific time. And it's going to be me and Lauren Lopkus. People can email in any questions. And you can order a book through there where you can get a customized book plate. So if you want to give it as a gift to somebody and you want it written out to them, or if there's a certain, like if you want it written out to yourself, you can get, if you order the book through, you don't have to get a book. You can just come for the show. But Skylight Books, which is a super cool bookstore in Los Angeles, is partnering with it, and you can get the book with a special like custom message, which is kind of fun. And so this is my book release party, and I hope you guys will come. I'm sure we'll talk some Bachelor stuff. So that is September 26th at 5 p.m. So much talking. Okay. We'll be back next week and breaking down Nick Viall's season with the rookie. All right, you guys. Have a good time. I'm sorry I chewed your ear off. I hope you guys are all doing okay. I hope you're all hanging in there. I hope everybody with kids and it's back to school and is still at home or not at home, or if you have any sick loved ones or you're not doing well, like just know that your little friend Arden is just, I'm sending you lots of love and I'm thinking about you, and I know everybody's doing the best that they can, and I appreciate your time and your well wishes. Okay, bye.
Welcome to Will You Accept This Rose, a production of iHeartRadio.
You know what time it is. It's time for Arden to get a little close and a little thorny. Oh, well, Arden's gonna go one-on-one. Gonna be high-energy fun. Convos are gonna be super real. She wants to get with you in all the feels. Feeling thorny. Yeah, feeling thorny. Whoa, feeling thorny. With Arden Marie, yeah, feeling thorny.
Oh yeah. Oh my God, you've probably never heard this song. I'm an idiot. Oh my God, I made this song. Will you accept me inviting you to my podcast? And making you a little, I'm gonna get closer.
Oh my God. Can you make this song?
Yeah. I commissioned it. I had a vision.
Oh my God.
Oh my God.
This is insane.
This is insane, right?
Oh my God.
Oh my God. Right?
This is gonna hold the whole.
Oh my God. Thank you so much. Oh my God. Welcome to a very special bonus podcast of Will You Accept This Rose. We are in our offshoot feeling thorny. Okay. My friend who is here has never heard that song, and the look on her face, I felt like I just gave you a gift.
It was like half joy and half wild discomfort.
That's exactly right. Well, when I had a vision for this, just a little backstory on this podcast, I didn't watch much reality TV. I'd never watched The Bachelor or anything. And like 4 years ago, somebody made me watch it. And okay. I was like, I am not a garbage person. I have like better things to do.
Who made you watch it?
Dan Martin. Nice.
Someone.
and I watched it and I was like, oh my God. Like, I don't watch sports or anything, but I became obsessed with like the gaming of it. And then I saw on Twitter that all of my favorite people, all these funny people watch it. And I had this fever dream on a mountain in Vermont, New Year's Eve, like sledding 1 year. And I was like, I need to make a podcast
right, so
I can talk about it with people. And I felt like I finally had a hobby for the first time in my life. And so I hired Mark Rivers, this genius who writes for like Adult Swim and stuff. I was like, I need you to write me a song that feels like Barry White / like a homeless man has jumped out of a bush and like breathed on your neck and jizzed on your feet. And I feel like he executed that.
He nailed it.
You are hearing the voice of a person. And part of the reason I'm expanding the podcast right now is outside of the Bachelor franchise is that I am a person with social anxiety who built this podcast. And I thought it was just going to be me sort of joking around about The Bachelor. And what I found is, as a nervous awkward human who seems outgoing but is actually like a super freak. I've been able to get to know people and I've had so much fun and it's been so good for me as a human being that I started taking more chances in life and eventually I sold a book.
Right.
And this is leading up to my book. You can pre-order now on Amazon, Little Miss Little Compton. But it's sort of, I wanted to bring people in and a lot of my book is dealing with, you know, my parents married on a dare. They weren't dating and they weren't, you know, they were never a couple and they stayed married for 50 years. And so my roadmap was a little bit off. And so I wanted to bring people in who I respect and I admire and who I feel like live their lives very authentically and who might have also had sort of quirky roadmaps and just talk to them about themselves. So here with me today, a long introduction. As you know, I talk about it all the time. I'm on this show Insatiable on Netflix, which is my favorite job I've ever had. And I probably, I talk about you actually a lot in the book, but I've never been on a show run by women or a woman. They always say like, it's hard to be it if you can't see it. And just like watching you navigate birthing the show, defending the show, and then being the joy, like the captain of the show with, in my perspective, with like a strong but light touch, like it's yours, but I feel like people have room to play. And I just wanted to bring you on, our creator, our showrunner, Lauren Gusses. Hi.
Thank you. That's so nice of you. Thank you.
It's true. I feel like our show really has a lot of, like, just the seeds of the creation of it are, it feels like you gave your voice to your inner teenager, like,
my inner, a lot of stuff.
Yeah.
Like my inner shame, sort of.
Yes.
Like the shadow self. And I don't know, there's a lot of stuff in the show that I felt like when I say shadow self now in this day and age, then I have to qualify that by saying it's things that probably I shouldn't have had shame about,
right,
but did.
Like what?
Like the LGBTQ stuff.
Right.
Like clearly there's no shadow of that. But the shadow self was the part of me that felt like I needed to keep that in the shadow.
Well, I can also say for me growing up, you know, when I think about a lot of my friends who didn't come out till after college, like no one was out. There was there was not one person out in my high school.
There was one person in my high school, and I think they came out the year after I left.
A guy or a girl?
Guy.
How did people treat him?
I think fine. I think it was, like, not a secret.
Right.
So people were fine.
Yeah.
But I can't tell you, like, most of my close group of friends came out, including my boyfriend, by the way.
Yeah.
Came out in some way or another after we left.
It's an interesting thing just talking about shame when I think about, you know, like when I wrote the proposal for my book.
Uh-huh.
A lot of it, I think it was more negative. Like I had my dad was tough growing up and like on the one hand, a lot of my family was really fun, but like my dad was pretty nasty. And I think I had so much like shame was such a huge part of my identity. I think I still struggle with it.
Mm-hmm.
It's sort of my default. If I'm tired, if I'm not checking in with people, like it just washes over me.
I recently, meaning in the last probably 36 hours, had a therapist tell me that my relationship to shame, like shame is a whole mansion in my life. Like it's a mansion. And she said, you need to make it a closet. And I said, perhaps not the best analogy considering my history. And she literally was like, she goes, if I was closer to you, I would poke you with my foot. But let's make it a condo instead of a giant mansion.
Yeah, you get a duplex, a duplex.
Right.
I honestly think, and then, because, I mean, not to be super dark, but like, just, and I don't believe in accidents. So they literally, I've been trying to sell this book for years. And the day that the offer came in was the day of my mom's funeral.
Oh my God.
Which is so crazy. They were like, hope you're having a great week.
Oh,
it's
no.
Like, not really. But
do you say that though? Because that's the thing. I'm sorry to interrupt you.
You can, until you say anything.
But I was recently having a conversation with somebody about that. Like the social norm of when someone says, how are you? You're not really supposed to answer. And awkward it is when something's really going on. So did you actually say, I'm not great?
You know what? When she emailed me, and I think I was like dry. I think I was getting driven to her funeral. And it's funny that you should say that, like so much of Like, you want to spare people. Like, you don't want to, like, do it to them, you right. know? Like, they can catch it, you know? Right. And so I was like, oh, my God, so excited to work with you. Side note, funny thing, you should not the greatest week. You know, like, my mom actually just died suddenly. And but I will say one of the gifts of that, I feel like the book in a weird way became more glass half full and more about her, like, she was the sort of sunshine, and my dad was like the shadows and shame.
Right.
But that has been, it's interesting. Shame is not something, I don't think I've ever publicly talked about shame. Like, yeah. But it's something that they say like guilt is, you feel like you've done something wrong, but shame is like you feel like who you are is wrong. Right. And I truly felt like
right.
for years.
Yeah.
Where did you get the message? Like, did you have a tough, like, I know very clearly where mine came from. Like, do you have a clear person of shame or a clear...
I was bullied as a kid, and everybody does the best they can.
That's right.
And the response a lot of the time was like, well, what did you do?
Right, right.
And nothing. Right. Nothing.
Right.
Like, my 7 best friends dumped me 2 weeks before my bat mitzvah when I was 12. Like,
oh my God.
What did I do wrong? Like, I wasn't cool. The boys didn't like me.
God. Isn't that just the worst
thing? And, like, I didn't know who to... I mean, it was really... So, even just the question of, like,
what did you do? Yeah, you're, like...
Kind of ingrained in me that, like, I was the bad guy.
Yeah.
And I think that I've, frankly, like, sought out relationships repeatedly.
Yes.
Not on purpose, right. obviously, where, like, I end up being the bad guy.
Right.
Or I feel like the bad guy. It's a very comfortable place for me to be.
It's so interesting how hard it is to break that. Like, that's one of the things I talk about is, like, what I wish I knew is... Not necessarily, I would go in, I would be, like that, just thinking friends... Mostly female friends, but then sometimes in dating that, like, I would have, like, fixer-upper. Like, if I could just cheerlead somebody the best, mm-hmm. then, like, if they felt okay about themselves, then, like, we would be okay.
Yeah.
And you just do it again, and you watch these paths about yourself.
Yeah.
It's hard to put down, like, it's hard when you, even when you start to see it, it's hard to, like, you're aware that you're doing it. So, like, so now what do I do? Like, how do I right. stop doing that?
Right.
How did your parents meet?
Oh, my God. My parents
yeah.
went to high school together.
Okay.
And my dad sat behind my mom and apparently had a crush on her, like, the entire time they were in high school. My mom was cool. I'm good. He had a crush on her the entire time they were in high school. My mom was cool. My dad was not cool at all.
Okay.
And, like, she didn't know he was alive. Like, she was a cheerleader and yeah. he was, like, a mathlete. Like, that.
Yes.
It was classic, like, John right. Hughes
yes.
ridiculousness. And then they... My mom originally went to the University of Iowa and then ended up transferring out to go to the University of Illinois because of because she felt like she lived too close to her grandmother and that her grandmother was up in her business.
Yes.
And B, because there was some scandal that I won't talk about.
Okay, great. I love it. I love it. I love a family scandal.
It was a family scandal. And she ended up going to the University of Illinois with my dad. And I think she dated his roommate or maybe both of his roommates.
Yeah, she did.
And that didn't work out.
Yeah.
And then I think they were at a bar one night and she's like, I know you.
Yes.
And then they ended up together.
Yes.
Yeah.
I love it. It was like last man standing.
But he, yeah, like he was like, it's a win.
Oh, my God.
Because, like,
couldn't
she dated
it.
A lot of, like, bad guys.
Yes.
Know, not bad guys, but just, like, my dad was so nice to her.
Yeah.
He's, like, a good guy.
Okay. I don't mean to even be, like, I mean, I will say it's now that I've watched numerous seasons of The Bachelor and I've watched different franchises of it because I have a podcast. What's fascinating, and Anna can attest to this because we've watched Australia, we've watched England, literally human nature. Every time, whoever is, like, the nice, responsible, like, I'm a sure thing. I will treat you well. I will not try to fuck your friends. They never pick that one. Like, it's always the final two. The one if your family likes them, they'll always pick the other one. The one that will give you herpes.
So, yeah.
Like,
well, you know, 1 in 4.
Yeah.
Let's not judge.
Yeah, but, like, it's truly like it's truly like human nature does not want the kind sure thing. Like,
no.
Always.
No.
It's fascinating.
It's fascinating.
Across the globe. It's like never did they pick the right one.
Yeah.
One of the things that's interesting just knowing, you know, like, when I see, I know that growing up with some shame and some shadowy stuff, like, you to me as a creator, and that you, I think more than any showrunner I've ever worked with, like, you know who you are, You know what your point of view is. You own it in a way that is unapologetic and not people pleasy and like, but graceful. Like, how did you go from being like, I got dumped from 7 friends, something's wrong with me, to being like, how did that person?
Oh, no, I still think that something's wrong with me.
Okay.
The thing is that I deflect it. So I feel like I'm very good in a crowded room.
Yeah.
Right. So if I can write the thing and put it out into the universe, then it's somehow farther away from me.
Yeah.
So I can really be clear about my point of view and what my work is because it's public and I get the bravado part of it makes it easier for me.
Interesting.
And I think I learned that my mom has so much bravado. Like she's abroad.
Yeah, she is. I've met your mom.
Yeah. So like she's a party.
Yes, she is.
And so I kind of learned that like, oh, like if I can be on, if I can be the party, then people are entertained by me and it's okay. And then if in my private life, that's when I'm like, oh, I'm a piece of shit. I shouldn't have said that thing.
Right.
I go over and over in my head, like, maybe I shouldn't have said that. Maybe I shouldn't have done that. Nobody wants to spend, like, I don't like to make plans with people more than one time in a week because I think they're going to get sick of me.
Me too.
Like, I, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's that. So I built
a podcast so I can hang out with people.
Yeah. So I get very uncomfortable and socially, especially if I don't have if I have an introduction, I can usually make conversation. But
yeah.
Like I'm never somebody that could walk up to somebody in a bar. Like it's just, you know, my husband was the president of his class. Like he's very good at being social. So sometimes I actually have to pretend like I'm him when I'm in a room by myself. Like
that's
what would Mike do?
Yeah.
But yeah, I think. Also, you have a certain amount of clout in a leadership position, which means I know people have to listen to me.
Yeah.
So then the anxiety goes away a little bit because I don't feel like I have to prove that I'm okay.
Right.
Like I've already been told I'm okay because I'm the boss. So the part that gets, I mean, I can't believe I'm saying this to you, but
I love this.
The part that gets wonky for me then is like, well, then is everybody being nice to me because I'm the boss?
Yeah.
Like everything nice that you've just said to me, it's like, yeah, but you work for me. So
no,
like,
but you know that's
well,
true.
With you, I kind of. No,
you believe me.
I believe you. But mostly, but like a lot of the time I check myself and then I go into that place of being 12 where I'm like,
yeah,
well, yeah, it's because now I like being the boss is kind of the equivalent of being the queen bee.
Yeah.
Like it's a little bit like you're popular, but it's because someone's paying you to be popular. And so it's just like it's a different thing. The dynamic gets harder. But if I'm in a room full of people where that's not my position or nobody knows.
Yeah.
Then I'm like, oh, right back to like I'm a piece of shit again.
The eagle has landed.
Asking the right questions can greatly impact your future, especially when it comes to your finances. So if you're looking for a financial advisor you can trust, certified financial planner professionals are committed to acting in your best interest. That's why it's got to be a CFP. Find your CFP professional at letsmakeaplan.org.
I'm late for a very important date.
Time is running out to score adult theme park tickets at child prices from Undercover Tourist. This summer, make your Walt Disney World vacation more affordable than ever. Escape into a place where magic has the power to transport you into stunning worlds and your favorite stories for less. Buy from Undercover Tourist, an authorized seller, and link to official Walt Disney World apps so you can add on Genie Plus and Lightning Lane upgrades easy. Book your adult theme park tickets at child prices with Undercover Tourist now and save. UndercoverTourist.com.
Hey, this is Jody Sweetin from the podcast How Rude, Tanneritos. As a nostalgic voice from your past, I'm here to remind you that amongst the stressful and chaotic existence we live in 2024, you deserve to get away. It's time for a vacation, no matter when you're hearing this. And let me tell you how you'll get there. The 2024 Hyundai Santa Fe. Want to bring the family to the mountains with the Santa Fe's available H-Track all-wheel drive? Well, it's got standard third-row seating and available dual wireless charging pads for the kids who just want to stare at their phone and not talk to you. You know what I mean. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Was Dexter your first TV?
No.
What was your first TV gig?
Where I was actually paid to be a writer.
Yeah.
It was a show on NBC called E-Ring. It was about the Pentagon. And I'm like,
I heard E-Ring and I thought of like that birth control that people have like sewn into their hips.
Yeah. No, it was a very confusing title, which may have been why the show didn't do so well.
Okay.
But yes, it was about the E-Ring as opposed to D-Ring or C-Ring
okay.
of the Pentagon.
How old were you?
27.
How did you like, like, what? Where did you go after college? Where did you go to college? And like, how did, what got you to that first job? I'm fascinated by like
the trajectory story.
Yeah,
it's weird. I went to Northwestern because I was, you know, only child of Jewish parents who like desperately didn't want me to leave Chicago, and I was too scared on some level to go.
How far away were they from your dorm?
20 minutes.
Too close.
Too close.
Way too close.
I was like scared that I was going to run into them at dinner at any time. Because also my parents are foodies, so they would have driven from Deerfield to Evanston to go eat. So like at any moment I could have run into them. Now the good news about that is that my parents hosted for all the Jewish holidays. So all my friends knew my childhood home, and my college friends got to know my high school friends, which was really lovely.
That's nice.
But also like I didn't really I was a late bloomer because I didn't really do all the crazy rebellious teenage shit until I was in my 20s and I moved out to LA.
That's interesting.
Really went hard.
I like that.
From 22 to 27, I was a catastrophe.
What flavor catastrophe?
All of them.
What was your, what was the most fun, naughty year? I had a fun, naughty year when I was 19 in Chicago.
I think.
I made out with everybody and gained 30 pounds in alcohol and burritos.
Yeah.
I had the best time.
The 24 to 27 years that like really was like circling the drain when I met my husband. Like,
I was
really like, I was making out with everybody.
It's so
but
fun.
I don't know. My 24th birthday, I got dared to make out with 10 people and I did it.
That's
so it kind of
the
like
best.
That started the thing.
I love that.
That I was like in the bar. And like 10 people in the same bar.
I love that.
Somebody tapped me on the shoulder while I was mid-makeout with someone. It was like, weren't you making out with that guy before? I'm like,
yeah.
It's a dare. It's my birthday. And then I went back to making out with the other. Like, I mean, I was a disaster.
That's really fun, though.
Super fun. But it's like kissing. It's like, who cares?
No,
like, you're not going to get pregnant. You're not going to get a disease. It's like, great.
I was all about keep it above the waist, maybe a fun dry hump. We make out in the doorway. Yeah, it's great.
It was the best. So that was fun. But I really, like, I started to maybe behave less ethically as I approached 27.
Yeah.
And my husband kind of swooped in, like, at exactly that moment. To be like, oh, I'm going to be the one.
God, I didn't know you guys have been together since you were 27. That's interesting.
14 years.
Wow, that's great.
It was 14 years on October 14th.
Lauren's husband is so sweet. He's so talented, and he looks just like Rick Moranis. He looks just like Rick Moranis, who's such a likable person.
Like three times a year, someone will stop him on the street and be like, hey, aren't you that guy from Honey, I Shrunk the Kids?
Yes.
No.
Yeah, I loved you
in
Strange
Brew. He's 20 years older than me. Like, but Mike is always like,
but people remember the movie star.
I know.
They don't know what he looks like now.
Right.
Like, they just know, like, you're the guy. You have not aged a day.
I know. We actually, in season one of Insatiable, we were like, can we get Rick Moranis to play the Jewish priest?
Oh, my God.
And then we were like, should Mike Ellis just play the Jewish priest? We had him do the line, like, five times. We're like, no, you're not an actor. Let's get someone else.
Oh, my God. I love the idea. I would like to see them in the same room. I love that.
I really want to see them in the same room.
What were you doing out here from 24 to 27? Like, what were you doing? How were you paying your rent?
I moved out here. I got a job as an agent's assistant at Broder Curlin Webb Ufner when it was still a thing before I got absorbed by ICM.
Yep.
And I was on a desk of two agents, one who was below the line and one who was above the line.
Yeah.
And it was like a comprehensive education about the television business. And also one of them was male and one of them was female. And so the guy, and I just recently found out he suddenly passed away, which is really tragic because I haven't talked to him in like 10 years.
Yeah.
But he was like, he was only 2 years older than me, but he looked like he was 40.
Yes.
And he was like Tony Soprano.
Yes.
He was amazing.
Yes.
And she was like Tracy Flick.
Yes.
And so I kind of was like, I really had to juggle two personalities at one time.
That's a vastly different prototype of people to go. Like, that is way different.
But also, she's an agent named Janet Carol Norton. I'm giving her a shout out because she's amazing.
Hey, girl.
I learned that you could be powerful as a woman without being a bitch.
Yes.
In Hollywood, which nobody had ever told me before.
Yeah.
And she really was like, very just smart and on her shit.
Yeah,
she was amazing. And so that happened. And then
were you writing scripts at home?
I was writing scripts, but also, to be honest, I moved out here to be a writer, and then I mistakenly got here and decided I moved out here to be skinny.
Yes.
Like, I just got confused about why I was here. Because I think it was like I always had body stuff. And the thing, I grew up in Chicago. The thing was like, nobody actually looks like they do in movies and TV. And then I moved here and I was like, no, they do here.
I didn't have body stuff until I moved to LA. I was just like 30 pounds heavier. Like, it was like, whatever. And then I moved here. I started jogging in college just because I didn't ever want somebody to tell me to lose weight. So I did it. But then I got out and I booked a job quickly because I was silly and quirky and different, you know, not not because I was everybody else. Right. And then I remember I got the flu one year and I lost all this weight and I started getting bigger storylines on the show I was on. And people, it was just because I had such a high fever, I couldn't walk to the fridge, but it was like unsustainable. And people were like, I know you're really sick, but you look so great. So I started smoking to try. I mean, it was, I like picked it up like a cold, you know, and then for a little bit, you lose your personality.
Yeah. Oh, well, I mean, I had to get into recovery.
Yeah.
You know, at 27. It's like right about the time. I bottomed out in every way at 27. But yeah, I decided that. So I wasn't really writing scripts to the degree that I should have been at that time, because I was looking up like diets and weight loss programs
gyms
and all that stuff.
That is a time year.
But one of the agent's clients got her first staff writer gig. And so she wanted to have an ally on the staff. You know, when you're an agent's assistant, you talk to all the clients on the phone all the time.
Yeah.
And so she got me in to interview for the writer's assistant position. And I was the least experienced person, but they wanted to hire a female.
Yes.
And so they hired me. And I ended up in the writer's room for Birds of Prey.
Yes.
Which was like this Batman franchise show for the WB when it still existed.
Yes.
And magically was in a room with a bunch of people who, while that show wasn't a big deal, they all went on to be massively big deals, even though at the time I don't think any of them were really as big of a deal. And now they're all huge. Like, in that room was Melissa Rosenberg, who went on to write the Twilight movies.
Yeah.
Lita Kalogridis, who's like the most successful female screenwriter other than Melissa Rosenberg of all time.
Yeah.
Eddie Kitsis and Adam Horowitz, who created Once Upon a Time.
Yeah.
Hans Tobiasen, who's run a million things.
Yes.
Right? Like Adam Armas and Kay Foster, who created a ton of shit. Like, they were all...
That's the room you were in.
Heavy hitters. And they were all like not... they weren't showrunners at that time. And so they taught me to pitch in the room. Eddie Kitsis specifically would ask me, like, when the room had a lull, he asked me, well, what... He's like, okay, Rookie, what do you think?
Oh, my God.
And
that gives
I
me
had
chills.
Something to say. And then they were like... Either it was good or it was good but not right, and they would explain why.
What a gift.
Such a gift.
What a gift.
But also Eddie Kitsis read my spec script that I had written while I was a Broder.
Yeah.
Was like, you're very funny and very talented and you're not a comedy writer.
Interesting.
I was like, what? And so he takes credit for my career.
Wow.
And I was like, what do you mean? And at the time, he was, you know, you needed more space to tell a really emotionally deep story.
Right.
So I wrote a 6 feet under spec, and that got me all my work. Wow. So from there... I went briefly, you know, the show got canceled, and I went briefly to work for a manager, and 10 days into that job, I got a call to be the writer's assistant from Melissa Rosenberg, who had moved on to the OC.
Yes.
And I was like, I just took this other job, and I realized every single person who was there was dying to get a writer's assistant job, and I had an offer, and I'm like, if there's going to be a bridge that I burn, this is going to be have to be the one.
That's right.
And so I did. Also, Melissa kind of tore me a new one. She's like, are you kidding? Like, you're going to call and not be ecstatic that I'm offering you this job?
Yeah.
I'm like, you're right, you're right, you're right.
Yeah.
So I went. And so I spent the first season
of
the OC, which was like life changing. I mean, just in terms of learning so much from all of a lot of women in that room, actually. And also Josh is fantastic.
And to be on a hit, too. Yeah, and like witnessing the birth of a hit.
Also witnessing the birth of teen stardom.
Yes.
Like I feel like I may have seen the moment where Adam Brody realized he was famous, because we went to some screening at Sharky's in like the South Bay.
Yeah.
We were in a car.
I love Sharky's. I love Sharky's.
We were in the car on the way, and a couple, you know, all the writers just jumped into the cars with the actors, and everyone was very friendly. And he got out of the car, and there was like a thousand screaming teenagers. And I saw the look on his face that was like, oh shit, I'm famous now. Which was magical for me to be like, oh, I think I just saw a seminal moment in somebody's life. Like,
I just got chills thinking back. Like, I didn't know going back between season one and season two of Insatiable, like, because Netflix is different than traditional network where you do a couple and they start airing and you're still filming. You know, we'd done the entire thing in the privacy of Atlanta. And then I remember going with you and the cast to Instagram and Facebook headquarters, and we'd already dropped. And, like, Michael Provost had gotten, like, who plays Brick, he'd gotten, like, a million Instagram followers in, like, a day. You know what I mean? And I was curious to see, particularly for the younger cast, a lot of them, it was one of their first jobs. Yeah. You know, the more veteran people, it's like Debbie's been, if Debbie was going to be a dick, she'd already be a dick, and she's lovely. You know, Dallas is lovely. Alyssa's lovely. Like, but I was curious to see if when we came back with all of this, because you can actually have metrics now because you see your followers go up. I didn't know if the kids would be different And
they weren't.
They weren't.
And it was so good.
I also think about part of it is the safety, too, of filming in Atlanta, you know, mm-hmm. like that there's, like, it's just us. It's like camp, you know?
It is, but I also just think we have a good group of people.
You haven't picked any jerks. Like, it's been a great group of people.
Yeah. It's a magical puppy pile of human beings.
And going back to the OC and everything, like, one of the things, like, it was interesting, has been interesting writing this book because you're sort of for, you know, you, I was just like, what, I just move forward, you know, right. And it was interesting. The publisher requested a chapter on, like, how did you get from this tiny town with a chicken caboose? Like, there's literally a caboose filled with chickens in a field and a general store and no stoplights. Like, how did you get from there to a TV? And looking at a lot of the happy accidents and, like, putting yourself in the right room, being totally. Even just being good at photocopying or being reliable. You know, I remember I was an intern at Conan, or I worked for a casting director. I worked at Improv Olympic in Chicago. Like, just being around and being competent, and then all of the talented people that they all go on. And if you just show up, and it's a lot, you stake your plan, but then the wind blows.
No, it's true. That's what happened. So from the OC, I ended up going to a show called North Shore on Fox.
Okay.
Which is about, like, it was basically Love Boat in a hotel.
Love it.
And the show went early. So they cherry picked all the writers from the Fox overall deals. So again, I was in, like, a powerhouse of writers on this show that was essentially the Love Boat.
Yes.
And they were all amazing. And they all took me under their wing. And then they continued to teach me how to pitch. And I kind of did a good job at my job. Like, I happen to be a great writer's assistant because I have perfect oral memory, and so I can write down verbatim everything everybody
says.
You're
the fastest typer I've ever seen, too.
And so they liked me.
Yeah.
And I gave them my spec that I'd written, thanks to Eddie Kitsis, a 6 feet under, and they all liked it. And so 5 people in that room had shows that were set to get picked up.
Yeah.
And none of those shows went. And I was devastated. It was year 5 of being an assistant, and I was like, I have to go. I made a deal with myself. Like, if it doesn't happen in 5 years, I think I have to leave.
Leave L.A.?
Leave L.A.
And go where? What was the plan?
I don't know. But I was like, am I really going to keep being an assistant for longer than that?
Okay,
like,
okay.
I just kind of, you know, I was a straight-A student. Like, I don't wait. Like, things happen for me. You know what I mean?
No,
like,
I just
was like,
no,
come
on. Get it. Get it done.
And I had one more shot because the executive producers of North Shore had an overall deal.
Yeah.
And they just re-upped, and their assistant had to leave because he had a meth addiction.
Yeah, great.
And
sure.
So
yeah, that'll do it.
They swooped in and were like, if you're not going to be the writer's assistant anymore, will you be our assistant? And I was like, okay. And it was Chris Brancato and Bert Salke, which is interesting for a lot of reasons, which I'll tell you in a second. And they went, we moved them to ABC, and they were in their overall deal, and I was there for 2 weeks. And then one of the writers from North Shore called my boss, Bert Salke and Chris Brancato, and said, Lauren, get off the phone. Because, you know, assistants listen in to all the calls.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And I was like, oh, shit. Oh, what did I do? Or what did I say? Because I'm someone whose mouth goes 5 miles faster than the rest of me.
Yeah,
so
I leap before I look.
I often say shit I'm not supposed to say. That's like my brand.
Me too.
And so I was like, who did I tell something I shouldn't have told? Or what did I do that somebody found out about? Because if you remember, that was in my period of time where I was really wildly misbehaving.
Yeah, girl.
So I got off the phone.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And I was like, I just was like, oh, my God, oh, my God, oh, my God. I hope it's just a personal problem, like, between it, because they were friends. So
yeah,
I was like, let's just pray that somebody's having problems in their house.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But not really. You never wish that for
anybody. No. But a small thing. Like, I want to fuck the nanny, but I'm not going to.
Right. Yeah. Let's hope it's that.
Yeah, let's hope it's that. Ooh, I don't know about you, but things are getting so hot in here. I think I gotta take a pee break.
Asking the right questions can greatly impact your future, especially when it comes to your finances. So if you're looking for a financial advisor you can trust, certified financial planner professionals are committed to acting in your best interest. That's why it's gotta be a CFP. Find your CFP professional at letsmakeaplan.org.
I'm late for a very important date.
Time is running out to score adult theme park tickets at child prices from Undercover Tourist. This summer, make your Walt Disney World vacation more affordable than ever. Escape into a place where magic has the power to transport you into stunning worlds and your favorite stories for less. Buy from Undercover Tourist, an authorized seller, and link to official Walt Disney World apps so you can add on Genie Plus and Lightning Lane upgrades easy. Book your adult theme park tickets at child prices with Undercover Tourist now and save. UndercoverTourist.com.
Hey, this is Jody Sweetin from the podcast How Rude, Tanneritos. As a nostalgic voice from your past, I'm here to remind you that amongst the stressful and chaotic existence we live in 2024, you deserve to get away. It's time for a vacation, no matter when you're hearing this. And let me tell you how you'll get there. The 2024 Hyundai Santa Fe. Want to bring the family to the mountains with the Santa Fe's available H-Track all-wheel drive? Well, it's got standard third-row seating and available dual wireless charging pads for the kids who just want to stare at their phone and not talk to you. You know what I mean. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
And then I see the light go off that the phone's been hung up, and I hear, Lauren,
no.
Get in here.
Oh, my God. I'm dying.
And I'm like, I literally felt all the blood drain out of my face.
I'm so panicked.
I know.
I'm so panicked.
And I walk in there, and Bert Salke looks at me, and he goes, you need to find another job. Like, you need to find a replacement for yourself, like, yesterday.
Oh,
and I was like, okay, what happened?
Oh, my God.
And I want to die, you know?
Of course.
And he goes, Ken is staffing you on E-Ring.
Oh!
And I was like,
oh my God, that's so exciting.
Oh my God. Why did you do that to me?
Oh my
he
God.
Just thought, he
oh
thought
God.
It was the funniest
oh
thing.
Oh my God.
He thought it was so funny.
Oh my God, Lauren.
So it turned out, like, I didn't know that was going to be the guy. It was Ken Biller. He's my fairy godfather. He gave me my first job. And he brought me in on this Pentagon military show. I'm like, I'm a Jew from Chicago. I don't know a dick about the military, you know?
Yeah.
To be the character writer. So once again, like, I'm designated other in the room.
Great.
But that was uncomfortable because I already didn't know what I was doing.
Right.
You know?
Right.
And I just kind of learned to run with it. Like, okay, I'm not here to tell military stories. I'm here to tell emotional stories. So that's what I'm going to do.
I like that I heard that in my mind, I'm like, if I have a specialty, I'm like, yeah. I'm needed. If not everybody does what I do, that's good news.
I think it's great, but not when it's your first job. It was very intimidating.
Of course.
Like, I don't even know if I can keep up. But the good news was because I didn't know, I asked a ton of questions.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the guys who co-created the show was actually a former Green Beret and a Marine and all the things. And he had spent so much time with I got on the show late. And so he had become very frustrated with writers who said, yes, I understand that's what really happened, but that's not a good story.
Mm-hmm.
He's like, I literally watched people's brain matter splatter out of their heads, and you're going to tell me that's not a good... Like, he just was very, you know,
yeah.
Understandably, like, the
yeah.
guy lived a life.
Yeah, like, how dare you?
And so instead, I learned to say things like, here's emotionally what we're going for. What would be a good way in that? And he grew very fond of my ability to pull that out and then put it into an emotional context without being disrespectful.
That's so interesting.
Which has helped me enormously, because since then, I have done a lot of adapting real life stuff to story, which is what Insatiable is in a lot of ways.
Okay, say this one more time. Make it nice and clear for me. So you start with, like, the emotional truth that you want to tell.
Right. And then I say, what's a way to get there? Like, how do you back that? How do you backfill that and make it real?
That's awesome.
So that was really helpful. But then it became clear that E-Ring was not going to move forward. And this is back when people were still watching pilots on DVD.
Yeah, sure.
The Dexter DVD was floating around. And we all watched it at lunch one day. And I had zero interest in writing a show about a serial killer. Like, I was not at the time. Now I am. But at the time, I was not obsessed with serial killers. I thought it was, like, too dark. And cop shows were not my thing. And I saw the pilot, and I was like, this is a dark comedy.
Yeah.
This is my favorite thing I've ever seen. I couldn't... From the moment that he murders someone, and then you hear really fun, happy Miami music.
Yes.
And he's on the boat, and he's so happy. I was
yeah.
like, oh, this is my jam. Like,
yes.
I couldn't stop laughing. I was so surprised about it.
Yes.
I was like, I have to get on the show. And I did, and I was there for 8 years. And somewhere in there, it was pretty clear I was going to get fired, because they had changed showrunners, and the showrunner did not like me. And I had to write my way out of jail. And so I wrote a pilot. I wrote a spec pilot. And then that person ended up getting fired off the show, so I stayed on Dexter.
Yes,
I had the pilot, and eventually that got set up at Ryan Murphy's company, and then Ryan and I did a pass on it together, and we did it at HBO, and we thought the thing was going to go, and that didn't go. But while I was waiting to find out what was going to happen with that show, CBS reached out with an article called "The Pageant King of Alabama,"
which is amazing.
About a man named Bill Alverson, who
coached
pageant girls.
Who's spectacular.
And I read it, and, like, my face exploded, and I was like, I have to do this thing.
Do you still start your writing process from, like, is your gen, like, does it usually start with the emotional core and then you worry about the plot?
It's different every time.
Yeah.
It's really, really different every time for me. I wish I had, like, also because I haven't worked with a ton of people, but the people who I have worked with have influenced me greatly. And so every single person I have worked with has a different approach.
Yeah.
And I have to say, working with Ryan was, like, life-changing. Ryan Murphy was life-changing because he's all about, like, the big story event.
Yeah.
And because I was all about emotion,
yeah,
I wanted to tell the very detailed emotional beats of the story. And we were writing scripts, like, we were breaking stories in the writer's room, and he walked in, and there was a whole episode 2 after the pilot that I felt was so emotionally important. Like, it was the heart of the matter of everything that the characters were going through in the show. And he walked in and he sat down and said, I'm bored.
Oh my God.
We can literally pull this entire episode out and jump right to episode 3. And I was devastated, and I was convinced he was wrong.
Right.
And then I read episode 1 next to episode 3, and I was like, he's totally right. He's 100% right. And that was, like, devastating and eye-opening. And that's part of the reason why on Insatiable, the story chews the furniture, because I realized how valuable that is.
You told me that he taught you, don't hoard your story.
No.
Don't hoard your plot.
Burn
like,
it.
Just
burn it.
Burn it. And that you'll, and to trust that you'll come up with more.
Yeah.
I thought that was so interesting.
Yeah. But it's interesting because it's in a lot of ways the opposite of the way that I was raised in the business.
Yeah.
And so I think it's hard to juggle which way to go back to. So sometimes now I like think of the big moments, and then I figure out a way to backwards engineer why the emotion makes sense.
Yeah. Yeah.
But a lot of the writers in our room go the other way that I used to do. So it's always interesting to be reminded, like, oh, right, that's also totally helpful. And, you know, this year I hired a guy who was on Dexter with me almost the entire time. And he's like, where did the theme and emotion, Lauren, go? Like, you're all like incident, incident, incident.
Yeah,
now.
And you're like, she worked with Ryan Murphy.
I'm like, thank you for reminding me, because on Dexter, he was all incident, incident, incident. And I was like, but wait,
right.
What's the theme? What's Dexter's emotional
right.
journey? He's like, I don't understand what's happening. I feel like we've switched places. And it's so beautiful. That's why long relationships are so helpful, because he was like my brother.
Yeah.
And the ability to do that was so wildly helpful.
When I hear just knowing about the show and just hearing about your process too, like, what a gift probably that young girl who got burned in 7th or 8th grade, like, how much in some ways the gift of that original wound.
100%.
I mean, I feel like that's where, as scary as it is, you know, like, I mean, this is going to sound, I mean, I truly, both of my parents died when I was recording this podcast. Like, I've never, like, doing stand up and stuff, I never ever was honest about, I was never very personal on stage. And when, like, life happens and you can't hide it, because it's like all of a sudden I'm like, I should be in my studio and, like, I'm in my freaking family den with my brother still doing the podcast. Like, you know, one of them was out of the blue, one of them wasn't. But, like, to then, it was a choice. I could have easily just canceled it that week. But, like, the choice of, like, here's where I am. I'm still going to do it. And I'm not great, but, like, this is also what helps me get better, is, like,
right.
I like making things.
Right.
And then I do believe, and you said to me, not, like, but this is sort of what the book is about, like, and the oddity of it closing, like, the book deal closing. You said to me, I just see, like, butterflies. I see, like, regeneration. that I think, you know, I really feel like the gift of the of, like, certain things that are so painful when you're going through them, it is like fertilizer for making. I really think creativity is such a healing thing.
I think you're right. Yeah.
And, like, without that, without, like, if you had been nailing it and, like, having not getting ghosted by those girls, like, that original hurt, I think, helps in a productive way, helps make good.
100%
art.
Yeah. No, because I think that's where my sense of humor ultimately. I mean, I think
me too.
I always had a sense of humor, but, like,
yeah.
I'm never funnier than when I'm angry or sad or hurt.
Yeah. Oh, my God. My brother and I, the jokes we were making just that weekend are just, like, nobody else could listen because they're a little dark.
I know,
but
yeah.
You're, like,
totally.
You're like, yeah. Yeah. I mean, I remember even, like, Debbie gave me a ride. It was, like, it had happened, like, 10 minutes earlier. And I remember, like, telling Dad, like, oh, it's just as my mom would have wanted. I found out at a twerking class. You know, it's
yeah.
like, what the fuck? Like, this just happened. This is
right.
real. Why are you already doing a bit? Like,
right.
you need to, it's like, ah! I'm floating.
Yeah.
What do you wish, and I know you guys have a dinner that you guys are going to, but like, what do you wish you could say to, like, I don't know, 14-year-old Lauren or 25-year-old Lauren? Like, what do you wish you knew that you know now that you wish you could have known then?
That's a really challenging question. I mean, to 14-year-old me, poor 14-year-old me.
I know, 14's tough, man.
So brutal.
You know I look like Barb from Stranger Things. I mean, you've seen it.
So good.
You've witnessed it.
I would have said, don't be afraid to be who you are.
Yeah. Which is, I think, what your show is. I think Instatial is that.
Yeah. And also, don't be so worried about what other people think of you. I would say that to me now, by the way. Like, 41-year-old Lauren, like, stop being so concerned about what other people think.
Yeah.
Like, nobody's paying that much attention to you. They're always thinking about themselves, so you do you, and people will figure it out.
And by the way, you walked through, like, such a storm, like, so gracefully. Yeah.
Thank you. I'm glad that it appeared to be graceful.
But, like, I know that wasn't easy, and
you did. It wasn't.
And what would you say to 24-year-old Lauren? Get your shit together, girl.
Don't make out with that guy. or that guy.
Yeah.
Like, stop emailing that guy.
Oh, yeah, like, yeah. Yeah,
somebody stop telling dirty stories to that guy.
Right.
Like, don't do that.
Yeah.
Yeah. But I also think, like, take the time to figure out who you really are.
I love that.
Because I think I didn't.
Yeah.
And I think it bit me in the ass a little bit in a way that I had to kind of do it backwards. And I did it the way I had to do it. And again, like the pain, you know, it works the way it's supposed to work.
I think, like, a lot of life is choose your own adventure. At a certain point, like, you have to learn it. You learn it by trial and error.
Right. Right. And I think, I don't know, it's weird. It's like the stuff that I would have gone back and told my 14-year-old self is stuff that I still feel like I need to learn.
Yeah.
It's not like I learned it.
No,
it's
me
like
too.
I know now.
Me too.
You know?
Me too.
Like, you're not the bad guy, and stop obsessing about your food and your body.
Yeah.
Which I still need to hear.
TV helped me with that. They kept throwing everybody in bikinis, and everybody would cry. And I remember just going, I'm not trying to be a bikini model. I'm just going to worry about if I'm funny and just, like, trust the wardrobe people.
Yeah.
Because I really hated how I looked, and I was just like, I can't hate myself anymore. I'm done.
I wish I were done.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Sometimes I can be mean to my face, but I'm nicer to my body.
Yeah. I also think, like, you're cuter than you think you are, and, like, go out and have more fun with that.
Yeah.
That would have been a nice thing to do. Like, yeah. I look at pictures of myself at 24. I'm like, what the fuck?
Yeah.
Like, I'm never going to be that young again.
Yeah.
Ever.
Yeah.
Ever. It's so depressing.
Yeah.
It's so depressing.
But then I think about, like, 65-year-old us is going to look back on us now and think that.
Yeah.
I'm going to end with two Bachelor-related questions.
Great.
You're at the Bachelor Mansion for a bachelorette or a bachelor, whoever. What outfit do you wear getting out of the limo first night? I have a bad outfit. Debbie said she would wear menswear.
Debbie wins.
I say I would wear I would get panic and I would do like a mullet dress. Like I would do like, it'd be like Regina in The Pilot.
Right.
I fear I would panic and have like a short in the front, but then I'd want to be formal. So I'd have something in the back.
See, I don't watch The Bachelor.
It's okay. What would you, but if you're going like on a date, if you had to go like to a singles cruise and you like, what is your,
I would wear a jumpsuit and it may or may not have sequins on it.
That's
because
great.
It depends on how dressy it needs to be.
That's
but like
a great call.
I feel like a jumpsuit.
All right, so you are not a Bachelor watcher. Here's your final question. Which one of these is not? So they put up, they would say like, Lauren Guss is showrunner, writer. Like they put a little chyron about what somebody's job is. Which one of these was not a profession of somebody on the show?
Oh my God.
Chicken enthusiast. Sloth. Tickle monster. Crybaby. Social media participant, lawyer, Jumbotron operator, or Canadian? Which was fake? Chicken enthusiast, sloth, tickle monster, crybaby, social media participant, lawyer, Jumbotron operator, or Canadian? Which one is fake?
Tickle monster?
That's actually real. Crybaby was fake.
Oh my God.
Yeah, crybaby. But the rest of them were people's careers. Yeah.
That's so depressing.
The Tickle Monster was also like a pediatrician, which was
Ooh,
like the creepiest. Yeah, that felt like it
like,
really.
How was that a career?
How was that a career, Anna? Why was he the? Yeah, he liked to like tickle people. He didn't last very long. He didn't last very
That's
long.
Gross.
Yeah, it was super gross. Lauren, may I say I love you? Is that inappropriate? Can I say that
I
love you?
I love you back.
And I'm just like, I appreciate you opening up your hearts to us via Insatiable, and then also you coming in and doing this with
Thanks
me.
Thanks for inviting me. I appreciate it. It was fun.
And I'm going to get your friend Steven on when he comes back to Los Angeles, and we can promote
the very fancy and talented Steven Sater.
Yes, who wrote Spring Awakening. He's going to come promote his book. And if you want to pre-order my book on Amazon, guys, I'm dying to. I want to be a New York Times bestseller. Rumor has it you need to sell 8,000 copies. If I was rich, I'd pay you all back, but I will sign anybody's copy. If you just pre-order it, you'll forget you ordered it, but then it arrives. Apparently, it's all about pre-sales.
It's all about pre-sales.
It's all about pre-sales. Little Miss Little Compton, you can pre-order it now on Amazon. Lauren, thank you so much.
Thanks, Ard.
And listeners, we'll be back. Bye.
Oh, yeah. Gonna get all up in you tonight. It feels so good. Got one little question for you, girl.
Will you accept this rose? Oh, will you accept this rose into your world? Oh, will you accept this rose into your world?
Will you accept this rose is a production of iHeartRadio. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.
This is Malcolm Gladwell from Revisionist History. eBay Motors is here for the ride. With some elbow grease, fresh installs, and a whole lot of love, you transformed 100,000 miles and a body full of rust into a drive that's all your own. Brake kits, LED headlights, whatever you need, eBay Motors has it. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, it's guaranteed to fit your ride the first time, every time, or your money back. Plus, at these prices, you're burning rubber, not cash. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
Hey, guys. Back at the playground again, huh?
Yep. You know what this playground could use? A wine country.
Heck yeah, and some waves so we could go surfing.
Oh, ah, yeah. Love that.
A redwood forest would be cool.
I'm in.
Ah, ski slopes.
Let's do it.
Tenor girl go shopping.
Yeah, baby.
Wait, did we just invent California?
Discover why California is the ultimate playground at visitcalifornia.com.
Asking the right questions can greatly impact your future, especially when it comes to your finances. So if you're looking for a financial advisor you can trust, certified financial planner professionals are committed to acting in your best interest. That's why it's got to be a CFP. Find your CFP professional at letsmakeaplan.org.